I've seen your future, brother. It is murder.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. David Lesh, Professor of Middle East History at Trinity University in San Antonio, Texas. He has written numerous books on the Middle East, including Syrian Foreign Policy and the United States, From Bush to Obama, The Arab-Israeli Conflict, A History, and The New Line of Damascus, Bashar al-Assad and Modern Syria. His latest book out in August is Syria, The Fall of the House of Assad. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. David Lesh.
Pleasure to be here, Ian.
And the recent defection of Brigadier General Manaf Tlass, whose father was a one-time Syrian defense minister who helped smooth President Assad, the father of the current president's, path to the presidency and lives in exile in London, refers to himself as Assad's right-hand man. What's extraordinary is that he defected and went to Paris, but nothing's been heard from him. Have you heard anything? Why is there hasn't been a peep out of him?
Well, I think he's trying to get a lay of the groundwork, because I'm not so sure, you know, the opposition would want him out front and center, because he and particularly his family are so associated with the Assad in the past, and basically his father, you know, Mustafa Tlass, being the kingmaker for the Assad, both, you know, father and especially the son. So I'm not sure, certainly the hardcore Syrian opposition want to be associated with, you know, a family that has been with the Assad for 42 years of political repression. So I think he's, you know, sort of gauging the landscape and seeing if there is a role for him to play outside of Syria with the opposition, because some opposition figures have come out and said they'd like him to play a role. But I'm sure there are many others that just have a healthy distaste for anybody from the Tlass family playing a role like that. So I think he's just lying in wait and seeing how things play out a little bit before committing himself further.
Well, you know him, Dr. David Lesh. He's supposed to be a sort of dashing, handsome playboy type. You know, I recall a similar high official defected from the Gaddafi regime, and nobody quite knew what to make of him. And then later he was assassinated. And it seems that it's hard to understand what his agenda was. Was he a freelance emissary or what?
Yeah, well, that's another reason why Manaf may be staying low-key, is because there may be people out to get him from pro-Syrian regime elements in Europe or elsewhere. But I've met him a number of occasions, had private dinners with him. He was the one person in the military security apparatus that President Bashar al-Assad allowed me to see when I was meeting with President Bashar between 2004 and 2009. And although he does have this reputation of being a socialite and, he's somewhat dashing and so forth, which means, I guess, that he parties a lot. And I have had a few beers with him on occasion. He always struck me, however, as being very serious individual, very intellectual, self-reflective, which was, I think, another side of him that many people didn't see or didn't get to experience. But it appears that, for the most part, his personality was much more like Bashar's older brother, Basil, who died, of course, in a car accident in 1994, who was the more charismatic, flamboyant military figure. And actually, Manaf Tlass was friends first with Basil before Bashar. And so on the surface, it seems that Bashar and al-Assad and Manaf Tlass are quite different personalities. But I think there are many sides to Manaf Tlass that many people from the outside haven't seen.
Well, my understanding, Dr. David Lesh, again, Professor of Middle East History at Trinity University in San Antonio, Texas, and the author of The New Line of Damascus, Bashar al-Assad and Modern Syria. My understanding is that Bashar al-Assad really isn't a hands-on leader, that the brother Maher and others are really running the show. And I guess the real question now is, as the Syrian opposition, it may not be unified, much more unified, but it's certainly causing more damage. And I think the dynamic is such that the more atrocities the Assad regime commit on their people, the more recruits the opposition get. So is there any real sign of fissures there within the people actually running the show, the Alawite clique and the brother Maha? And that's one question. And the second question is, the Russians appear to be trying to engineer some kind of deal where Bashar is sacrificed as a kind of figurehead, but somehow they can patch things up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think on the first question, people have been saying that Manaf Talas's defection is a fissure in the inner circle of Bashar al-Assad, and that's patently untrue. Manaf Talas was not in the inner circle. He hasn't been for a few years. There's been some estrangement, I think, between him and Bashar with the fact that Manaf was not appointed defense minister as his father had been, or he wasn't promoted to major general from brigadier general. And certainly at the beginning of the uprising, Manaf Talas was marginalized because he wanted to take a different approach, particularly one of negotiations with the opposition rather than the brutal, harsh crackdown that ensued. And so, in fact, he was not part of the inner circle. But on the other hand, as you know, oftentimes perception is more important than reality. And the fact that, the Syrian family most often associated, for 40 years with the Assad has abandoned their erstwhile patrons is significant in symbolic terms. More than anything else, and the fact that that Manaf Talas and his family are Sunni. And I think this indicates and reinforces the notion that as this crisis has worn on, that it has become much more sectarian, and that the decision-making apparatus in Damascus around Bashar, the inner circle, so to speak, has gotten smaller and smaller, tighter and tighter, which is typical in crisis situations, and that it perhaps has gotten much more so Alawite rather than including those from other sects in Syria. As far as Russia is concerned, my read of it is that the Russians, especially Vladimir Putin, is making the decisions on this, President Putin, and he's taken a very much a Russian nationalistic approach to Syria. He almost sees the protests against him in Russia as being caused by many of the same forces that are causing the protests in Syria. So he almost sees himself in a similar boat as Bashar al-Assad, in addition to the fact that his wedge into influence into the Middle East is being at the center of attention and possibly being the only party that could perhaps bring about a peaceful solution to this. So he isn't going to give that up by throwing Bashar al-Assad to the wolves until he absolutely has to. Now, will he and Russia stay with Bashar far too long and therefore be discredited with what may come in the aftermath of Bashar al-Assad? That's a dangerous game he's playing, one that the U.S. didn't play that well in Iran in 1979 with the Shah of Iran. How long do you stay with these people? But I think Russia, and particularly Putin, I mean, they've had enough of the moralizing of the West in terms of blaming Russia for allowing the crisis to continue because of the use of their vetoes in the U.N. Security Council. Because, at least they're usually joined by China and perhaps a few other countries on occasion, whereas, they say, well, look at how many times that the U.S. has been the only country that has vetoed U.N. Security Council resolutions, particularly on Israeli issues. So they are really not swayed by the criticisms and, in fact, will probably push back even harder against harsh criticism from, Secretary of State Clinton and other U.S. officials.
Well, David, let's say that Secretary Clinton, who's often said that Assad's days are numbered, she appears to have been making a slightly different approach to the Russians and to the Chinese, and by suggesting that if they don't weigh in now with their influence, they're going to have no influence in a post-Assad Syria. So how much is realpolitik getting through to Putin? I think your point about him being paranoid about the demonstrations in Moscow being arranged by the West, apparently, in spite of the absurdity of that, he actually believes it. So he probably does see himself in the same situation or a similar situation to Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah, no, I think, from the U.S. perspective, this is the only way to get it done. And there have been two ways of doing it: do you pressure and kind of humiliate the Russians into taking what should be the right approach in diplomatically forcing Assad from power, or do you, you know, coddle the Russians and see them as part of the solution? It seems that the U.S. has gone back and forth on this, which perhaps has not been helpful in terms of laying out a consistent policy with the Russians. But the Russians, too, have been speaking out of both sides of their mouth at time, and I think all of this just reflects the complexity of this issue and how, you know, this situation has become a function of not only a regional Cold War between Syria and Iran and their allies against Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and their allies in the Middle East, but also against Russia, you know, between Russia and the United States.
So what kind of a deal could work if there's to be a diplomatic solution? It seems to me that the Bashar al-Assad's kind of a figurehead, and he doesn't really have his hands on what's really happening, and that the core group that are in charge of the killing machine and who basically just are prepared to preemptively kill anybody and everybody that challenges them until, you know, they've basically killed the opposition into submission. That seems to be their position. I can't see them making any deal, and that's the group that you want to get rid of, surely.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, is that no matter what the U.S. and Russia orchestrate or put together, even if they do decide to start working together in terms of putting forward a diplomatic resolution to this, there's no guarantee that anyone in Damascus is going to listen to them. And how much leverage does Russia, you know, really have? You know, the Damascus still has outlets in other areas to Iran and some other countries. It would certainly be a huge diplomatic loss for Syria. But I think the regime in Damascus, including Bashar al-Assad, and particularly Bashar al-Assad, who I would say is more in control than perhaps you're giving him credit for, I think that he's in such an alternate reality. You know, this alternate reality has been constructed and orchestrated around him for years. And I saw this change in him up close and personal for a number of years, to the point where, you know, it's reflected in all of his interviews and his speeches that, you know, he's doing this for the good of the country. His continuance in power and those around him, they all will sink or swim together, is for the good of the country. And I really do believe he thinks that most of the uprising and violence is caused by external conspiracies. And there have just been enough of those throughout Syrian history that to make Syrians, especially the leadership, tremendously paranoid over all of this. And so when he blames things on al-Qaeda and on Israel and on the United States and the West and these pernicious forces from the outside, I think he believes them more than most people think, and the leadership believes them. And their Syrian supporters believe that they are under threat. And so, you know, from their perspective, it's a matter of survival. And especially the more sectarian as this has become, they are not going to give up easily. And they're not going to give in to a diplomatic resolution that just, you know, will end up having heads roll.
Well, just in closing, Dr. David Lesh, it does seem to be something like a proxy war now between the Saudis and the Iranians. And it does seem that it's the violence will escalate. I think also we're going to be joined in a moment by a representative of Amnesty International, who's actually been behind the line, snuck into Syria and documented atrocities. My understanding is that figure of 15,000 killed may be way below what's happened. There are up to 100,000 people who have gone to prison, and a lot of them haven't come out. There are 50,000 missing. The figures of the deaths so far at the hands of the Assads may be far, far higher. So what's your sense of what can break this this deadlock?
I wish I had an answer to that. Unfortunately, from my perspective, there's no easy answer. There's a worse one and a more worse one. I don't see anything happening that will alleviate the bloodshed in the near term, even if there is miraculously some sort of diplomatic entente between Russia and the United States. I think ultimately, and this might have to happen, sorry to say, but an all-out civil war in Syria may be the only thing that produces some stability in the long term. As in most of the wars, you have a winner and a loser, and the winner sets the terms. Unfortunately, Syria is so strategically located that any sort of all-out civil war, even more than what has already occurred, will bring in all of these outside forces and become, you know, a Lebanon on steroids, or an Iraq, even worse than Iraq. And that could lead to everyone's nightmare scenario of a regional conflagration that could lead into an international one. So I really do not see an easy way out of this. I think Kofi Annan and the United Nations and others are trying to do the best they can, but I really don't see any of those efforts succeeding in the near term.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Dr. David Lesh.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. David Lesh, a professor of Middle East history at Trinity University in San Antonio, Texas. He has written numerous books on the Middle East, including Syrian Foreign Policy and the United States, From Bush to Obama, The Arab-Israeli Conflict, A History, The New Line of Damascus, Bashar al-Assad, and Modern Syria. His latest book out in August is Syria, The Fall of the House of Assad. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a representative from Amnesty International who snuck into Syria to document human rights atrocities.